You're going to be traveling.
Speculation. Mukam karoti vachanam pandum lam jayate grim yakripatamaham vande si gurum dinitarina. Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda si advaitikadara shvasti gaura bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Jaya Jaya si Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya, Jaya Nityananda, Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Jaya Advaita Chandra, Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So, tonight, going to speak about a very advanced and senior devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is just about everybody. I'm going to talk about Pundarik Vidhaniti. But before I speak about Pundarik Vidhaniti, today I got some very exciting and enlivening news in my email. I have great respect for Mother Sitala. She is like my Shiksha Guru when it comes to Vaishnavacharyas, although she's always embarrassed when I say that. And she and I have for some number of years now gone back and forth with, yeah, but what about that? Well, yeah, and then that. Oh, well, you know, but there, and then how about that? You know, and it wasn't there, and he would, you know, like that. We go back and forth like that quite regularly. And I could sit and listen to her speak on Vaishnavacharyas for hours, and So it's a very nice relationship. And so some people listening may be aware of the fact that some 10 years ago or so, she wrote a book on Narottam Das Thakur and never finished it. And Indradyumna Maharaj and myself have been after her for years and years to publish this book. Yeah, I'll get to it. I'm doing so many things. Anyway, about 8 years ago or so, she graciously gave me an unedited copy of the manuscript on the condition I don't copy it and share it with anyone, but that I was free to use it for material and reading, and I very liberally shared that. So out of the blue today, I got an email from her, and it said basically that she's retired from all of her committees and things such that she's on in Mayapur and is spending the next year exclusively working on her book, and that she is going to publish it. And she provided me with a long list of details and questions that she wanted my input on as far as resources, materials, and this is and that. And then she provided me something that I've been eagerly waiting for. There's a Vaishnava scholar, a Gaudiya Vaishnava scholar in Bengal, whose name is Hari Priya. And he is, he's a genius when it comes to Vaishnava information. It's a walking encyclopedia. Very knowledgeable, very well respected. And she has had many, many conversations with him. So she sent me the transcript of several conversations on topics she and I had discussed that we had been waiting to get answers from him. So both of those bits of information were there in my email box this morning, and it just made my day. Wonderful. So we have sometime before the end of the year the good fortune to look forward to Sitala Mataji's book on the life of Narottam Das Thakur. And I'm holding you to it, Sitala. All right, so Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Generally speaking, when we're talking about the biographies of different Vaishnavas, we have, some background information is there, and then at some point it will mention, oh, and by the way, during Krishna Lila there was so-and-so, or usually at the end it gets drawn in. In the pastimes of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, right off the bat, every biographer, every detail says the very same thing. He was Vrishabhanu in Krishna Lila. So really prominent personality. Of course, Mahaprabhu, being in the mood of Krishna, had the greatest respect for Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and he would regularly call him father. The exact phrase, oh, that's right, you don't know Bengali, so I can get away with anything. Bap Narottam, no, that's Narottam. Bap Pundarik. My father, Pundarik, he would call out like that. And he also, Mahaprabhu had a handful of pet names for Pundarik. One was Premnidhi, which he called him that because he considered him to be the treasure house of love. We called him Premnidhi. And Mahaprabhu always treated him with the greatest respect because Pundarik Vidyanidhi was the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He was initiated at the same time as Advaita Acharya. So Advaita Acharya, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, Ishwara Puri, these were all god brothers. And of course, Ishwara Puri is the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the greatest respect was there for Pundarik Vidyanidhi. This is just one of the many examples that Mahaprabhu gives that we can follow of how to treat god brothers of our spiritual master. Of course, he came from a very, very pious Brahmin family. His father's name was Vineshwar and his mother's name was Ganga Devi. And they lived for some time in East Bengal near what we now know as Dhaka. And as happens sometimes, they belonged to one group of Brahmins and there was another prominent group of Brahmins that didn't agree with some of them. And somehow or another, they became ostracized, Pundarik's family. And, they were at odds with them, and so they were not, at that time, being able to live as a very respectable Brahminical family. You know, they were just kind of like outcasts, you know, saying, oh, yeah, that Pundarik and his family, yeah, you know those guys, you know, yeah. So, how you refer to Pundarik that way, I don't know, but at any rate, so what they did after some time is that they moved to the Navadvip area. I should backtrack a little bit here. One of the characteristics of this Brahmin family is, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati mentions this, is that they would only have one son generally, or sometimes no son at all, just daughters. And this was, as a result, the family was not very expansive. You know, they didn't have a lot of dynasty, so to speak. So this was the lineage that Pundarik Vidyanidhi came in. He was the only son. So, of course, the place that he lived in, there was you know, very old temple there that's still there now from the original village that he grew up in. And Prabhupada mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it's in very bad shape and in much need of repair like that. One of the great things about Prabhupada's purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the treasure house of little tidbits of knowledge. Not only how to get to these places, take the railroad line here, get off at that stop, take the bus, you know, which of course I don't know if those, you know, that was some time ago. But also, you know, and this place is related to here, and this person is, you know, all of these details that Prabhupada received in his own research and from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, at any rate, after some time, the family relocated to Navadvip area. And as I mentioned, Mahaprabhu used to call him Premnid. He was also called Bhaktanidhi, the storehouse of devotional service of bhakti. Acharya Nidhi was another name that he was known by. Mahaprabhu would say to the devotees, simply by hearing the name Prem Nidhi, the whole world becomes purified. And this would always embarrass Pundarik Vidyanidhi how much Lord Chaitanya would glorify him. But Lord Chaitanya would always say, when will I see him again? When will I see him again? He is, you know, the source of inspiration to me. So, anyway, when Pundarik Vidyanidhi and his family moved to Navadvip area, they moved there for a few reasons. One of them was that they wanted to be near the Ganga. This was of importance to them, to be near the Ganges River. Now, one time, Mahaprabhu was calling out Pundarik's name, and this was just near the time when Pundarik was moving there. It was not very well known in Navadvip at the time, and he was calling out, Pundarik, Pundarik, my friend, my father. And the devotees, they were very surprised to hear him calling in this way. They were not familiar with this Pundarik. So Mahaprabhu began to describe him. He said, his character, it is quite extraordinary. Just by hearing his name, this whole world will become purified. But if you look at him, the way he dresses, he would be just like a materialistic person. And that is how he would be perceived. No one would recognize him as a Vaishnava. Yet, he is constantly merged in the ocean of the topmost love for Krishna. Now, despite living on the banks of the Ganga, he never bathed in the Ganges. Now, one might think, well, I mean, what's the point? You move to the Ganges to be purified so you can take bath in the Ganges. He considered it, you know, to be a big offense. He would see people going there and brushing their teeth in the Ganga and gargling, spitting back in the Ganga and washing their hair and their armpits and their laundry. And he just considered this to be such an offense to Ganga Devi. He couldn't stand to see any of this. So he wouldn't go there during the day when people were doing all these things. He would go late at the night. And he would take some bucket of Ganges water and then go over into the, you know, side of the bushes or something and, you know, do whatever had to be done, take his bath and all there. Never once did he put his feet in the Ganges. He just considered it just the most unbearable offense to touch Mother Ganges with his own feet. So, you know, he would never engage in worshiping his deity. Before he engaged in worshiping deity, he would never do it unless he took drink of Ganges water, said Achman with Ganges water, not like us, you know, wrap the thread, Ganga Chada, Muni Chada, okay, and I got some sacred water here, I'm so powerful, Haribol. No, he would bring Ganges water to his home, and he would take Ganges water in his hand before he would actually do any type of his deity worship. But Mahaprabhu continued, because he externally appears like a materialistic person, none of you are going to be able to recognize him. None of you will know who he is when you see him. So in this way, you know, Lord Chaitanya gave some indication as to the qualities of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Chaitanya Charitamrita itself describes Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions that he's one of the major branches of the tree of devotional service. And very, very dear to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, we have two friends during this time, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami and Mukundadat, and then of course Mukundadat's brother Vasudev. Now, they all originally lived in Chitgun, this village near Dhaka where Pundarik Vidyanidhi was from. And, you know, they were acquainted with Pundarik Vidyanidhi. I mean, you know, you kind of live in the same village in Alachua, everybody knows. Oh, yes, yeah, I know Sesha. Yeah. But did you know? Oh, no, I didn't know that. You know, so they kind of knew who he was like that, you know. Plus, Gadadhar Pandit's father, his name was Madhava Mishra, and he was a very good friend of Mukunda. So Mukunda, he was, you know, extremely transcendental, and he also understood the transcendental nature of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Gadadhar Pandit did not. Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had heard of Pundarik Vidyanidhi and knew, oh yeah, isn't he part of that outcast Brahmin family? Yeah, oh, that guy, yeah, I've heard of him. You know, but of course, Chaitanya Charitamrita mentioned this is all for the sake of their lila, just their pastimes together. So one day, Mukundadat, he was with Gadadhar, and he said, you know, Gadadhar, you haven't taken initiation yet, have you? He said, I'd like to introduce you to one Vaishnava, very, very advanced devotee. So amazing, his level of devotional service. Even Mahaprabhu himself glorifies him. You just can't imagine. So, now Gadadhar, Pandit Goswami, he's not to be confused by the Gadadhar from the Panchatat. Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, he was a, highly renounced brahmachari. Very, very, very pukka brahmachari. Very simple, it detached from all sense gratification, but a very austere ascetic life. And, you know, so he figured, I'll meet a guru who's like-minded and I'll be inspired in this way, you know? So, Mukundada said, yeah, you come with me. Let's go and you know, meet him. You're really going to be impressed. He's such an incredible Vaishnava. So they went there. The description given in Prem Vilas is quite detailed. When they arrived there, they found that Pundarik Vidyanidhi was sitting very comfortably. Gadadhar offered his obeisances and was given a respectful seat. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi received him very nicely. Said, Mukunda, said, who is your friend? What is his name? What village does he come from? I can see from the effulgence of his body that he's rendered devotional service for quite some time to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It has impacted him in such a way that he's become very advanced. So Mukundadat indicated, he said, oh, this is Gadadhar. He's very fortunate because from early childhood, he's detached from family life. He's very, very strict brahmachari and lives a very austere life. His external material identity is that he's the son of Madhava Mishra. You know Madhava Mishra from our old town. But he's always absorbed in devotional service, and he only associates with Vaishnavas. He won't associate with anyone else. And he's extremely dear to all the devotees. They love him very much. And he heard about you, and he was very anxious to come and meet you. Now, after hearing about these wonderful qualities of Gadadhar Pandit, Pundarik Vidyanidhi smiled, acknowledged him, very happy to meet him. The mutual appreciation was not there, Gadadhar. Gadadhar took a look at the scene. Pundarik Vidyanidhi was seated like a great prince. He was seated on a beautiful metal bed. Now, sometimes you'll see in the villages, you know, someone will have one of those like four wooden posts with the string, you know, the rope, cotton, you know, beds, maybe a mat thrown on top of it. Or maybe they have actually a proper wood frame bed. Nothing like that. He had a very elaborate metal framed bedstead that was decorated with intricate carvings on each of the posts, the front post being slightly shorter than the back one so that it gave a look of height and a nice decorative, you know, scroll going across the back of it. And it was covered with detailed brass and ivory inlay. Very, very amazing. And Had on each of the four corners, extending out from the post, were lamps, brass arms that had ghee lamps at the end of them like that. And then hanging above was a beautiful, elaborate three-tiered canopy. And this three-tiered canopy was covered in the finest of silk with pearls draped around it, and nice red tassels where each of the pearls went up and the next group came down like that. And then coming down on a chain from the middle of that canopy, which was quite high, was another three-tiered lamp of nice wicks like that. And the mattress, he said, was the softest of mattresses and the most expensive silk sheets and nice red silk pillows. It mentions they were red. Red silk pillows. And then there were additional pillows piled up against the back for him to lean up against and stretch his arms on. Nice bolsters like that. Red pillows there and red pillows there. It's very, very comfortable. Nice big mattress. He could stretch out if he wanted to. On one side, there were several small and then a couple of larger water pots. They were all within his reach, filled with different types of beverages, different types of things to drink. And these were not just water pots. These were intricately carved brass water pots, some small, some large, each with a nice cloth sewn with trim hanging over the top of it. And then on the other side was a very, very shiny brass tray with freshly made betel leaves. And the betel leaves were folded in such a way with very long clove sticks stuck through them. And they were all stacked there for his enjoyment, ready to be taken as he wanted. There were two very large mirrors on either side of the bed, to which he was continually looking from one side to the other, admiring the red-stained lips that he had from chewing betel. And it mentions that in some places, the mirrors had little red flicks on them from the betel that was spitting from his mouth when he would chew the leaves. He was continually glancing back and forth while he'd be chewing. Yeah. He had sandalwood paste tea lock on his forehead, and he was decorated with very elaborate and detailed dots and kumkum. That was a mixture of sandalwood paste and the finest scented aguru oils. So that just the dots on it, I don't know if you've had the opportunity in the association of some of the devotees I visit, I've had the opportunity to see real aguru oil and smell it. Just the tiniest of drops is so fragrant. And his forehead was decorated with tiny drops like that. And his hair was all long and very, very elaborately combed and massaged and well-groomed with the finest of hair oils. Now we get to his clothes. The most expensive and elegant of silk clothes, all finely embroidered with sleeves and cuffs and buttons and all kinds of things. And if that wasn't enough, sitting right next to him, in front of the bed, 3.5 feet tall, was a very large silver and brass hookah. Actually, that reminds me of a little side story. There's a deity in Vrindavan called Bihari Hookah. The story behind this deity is that the king had a daughter, and the king wanted to have his daughter married. And so all the different princes came, and Krishna came also. So they were having some swayambar and all the different activities, and Krishna was beating everyone. All the different, you know, kshatriya, king, princey kind of activities they were all doing, and Krishna was beating them all. And so finally, he was the last one, and the king said, there is one final test. If you want to marry my daughter, you must smoke the hookah. And if you can smoke the hookah successfully, then you can have my daughter's hand in marriage. So the king packed the hookah special with some stuff that would have done any normal person in. So Krishna smoked the hookah. And absolutely no effect on him. Of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The entire world is emanating him. What's some stinking little hookah going to do? And so the king realized, oh, you're definitely qualified to marry my daughter. So he gave the daughter in marriage. That deity is in Vrindavan there. You can go to the temple and see that deity, Bihari Hookah. And on the altar next to the deity is a hookah. Yeah? Now, I was doubtful when I heard this story from one local Brijbasi. But then I heard it from a very well-respected Brijbasi scholar, Vaishnava. And then I saw it in Bhakti Chaitanya Swami's book and in Lokanath Goswami's book. So there you go. Anyway, Pundarik Vidyanidhi had a hookah, a 3-foot-tall one. So, you know, all of this package put together is the just most amazing trappings for the life of a sense enjoyer. Completely sense. Oh, and I forgot. Over here next to the pond, he had this jeweled box. It was actually kind of a brass gold box with different types of jewels on it. Maybe the 9 planets or whatever, but very beautiful. And inside there were all types of stuff, spices and ponds and, you know, betel nuts and all just within arm's reach. He didn't even have to, could you hand me that? No, it's just reach right out. It was all just very close, just like that. So in this way, and I forgot, sitting like 2 centuries on either side were spittoons. Because after all, not like the common people that we see now in Vrindavan, they just spit in the streets. He had these 2 very, very shiny spittoons and he would fill them like that. In addition, there were 2 people standing on either side of him with long peacock feathers, groups of them fanning him in this way. And then just over here on the side was a nice silk hammock. In case all of this was not enough and he wanted to stretch out a little more, there was a hammock over here he could go and lay on. Now, of course, because he was engaged so wonderfully in devotional service, he actually looked very charming. He didn't look like just some debauchee sense enjoyer. He looked like Cupid himself. Those who did not know Pundarik Vidyanidhi would look at him and look at everything around him and think, all right, this guy's out there for a good time. So, Gadadhar Pandit, the most strict of brahmacharis, he saw all these luxurious items, and he saw the general atmosphere of materialistic life present in front of him. He became very suspicious. I mean, you know, he'd been a renunciate since his early childhood, and he had come, you know, with high regard on the descriptions of the character of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And he looked at all this and he thought within his mind, he said, what sort of a Vaishnava is this? He surrounds himself with such finery and such lavish living. Hearing about the devotional mood of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, I had developed some respect for this person. But now I see the type of individual he is, and I'm slowly giving way to the arising of doubt and suspicion within my mind. It mentions that Gadadhar Pandit was not able to recognize the high devotional quality of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. As a matter of fact, Prem Vilas says he felt entirely let down by the entire experience. I mean, he thought to himself, I've come here looking to see a sadhu, a guru, someone who I can approach for spiritual knowledge and learn from and take shelter of. But instead, all I get is this sense gratifier. Was this a Vaishnava or a prince wallowing in some luxury, Gadadhar thought. So Mukunda made note of this. He could tell by looking at Gadadhar Pandit's face. He's a little doubtful here. So Mukunda thought, all right, time for Gadadhar Pandit to learn a lesson. So just to bring out a particular mood in Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he recited 2 particular verses from the Bhagavatam. And those verses kindled the flame of love of God that was in the heart of Pundarik Vidyaniti into a raging forest fire. Gadadhar Pandit was able to perceive that something was about to happen, but didn't know what it was. So Mukunda spoke in the sweetest. And remember, Mukunda is one of the singers, not one of the Ghosh brothers, but he, you know, very, very wonderful voice for singing. And so he sang this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam from the 10th canto, glorifying devotional service. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who is granted the position of mother to the she-demon Putana? Putana was unfaithful and always hankering for the blood of human children. With that desire in mind, she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast and came in that way to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement, devotional service as his mother. As soon as these words glorifying the benefit of devotional service by anyone entered the ears of Pundarik Vidyaniti, he began to weep. Tears came down his face. His eyes overbrimmed with water, it says, and he began to cry incessantly, rolling down his face like the streams of the Ganges River coming out of the mountains. At the same time, all the symptoms of ecstasy began to manifest in his body. He wept, he trembled, he rolled about, he roared very loudly, and finally fell into an unconscious state. And then suddenly he regained consciousness, and in a very loud voice he yelled, "Speak, speak, say more." And again, then he fell to the ground rolling around, agitated by the deep spiritual emotions that were repeatedly thrashing within his body. He kicked around at everything that was near him. Now remember, he's on a nice bedstead. He's got pots of water and drinks and jeweled boxes and trays of pan and lamps. And he kicked around at all of these things, the brass pots of water, the containers of betel nuts, the pillows, the bed sheets. Everything just became a huge mass of confusion on the bed like this. And he began tearing at all of his opulent clothing and ripping them off. And his hair, he began pulling at it, and he looked like the Putana witch. His hair became all out, you know, in different directions. And, you know, it was all, you know, went haywire, you know. He was rolling in the dust on the floor, and he was crying out, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna, my Lord, my soul, my very life. You have made me hard-hearted like a stone, that I am not delivered in this way." And he meant it very loud. He said, "I have been deprived of the Lord's association in his most merciful incarnation." And he rolled around continually, kicking at everything within reach in the beds. And, you know, they were all the associates were afraid he's going to break his bones. You know, he's going to hurt him. I mean, our treasurer, Jashirathe's husband, Uddhava, just fell from some soccer accident and broke a shoulder bone. So what to speak of Pundarik Vidyaniti? He's thrashing around, falling off the bed and banging and everything. They were afraid he was going to break his bones. So, you know, three persons came and tried to hold him down, and he was so violently thrashing in this mood of ecstasy. He kicked them away and he kicked everything, and the disciples just stood back completely, you know, helpless. They didn't know what to do, you know. Finally, he fell unconscious. And everything quieted down. And he lay there on the floor, not breathing at all, submerged in a complete ocean of spiritual ecstasy. After seeing this, Gadadhar Pandit began to get a little worried. He started thinking, "What inauspiciousness has overcome my mind that I began to think offensive thoughts about such a great personality?" He then turned and embraced Mukunda, and Mukunda became very pleased by this because he understood what had happened. Drenched with his own tears of appreciation, he said, "Mukunda, you have acted like a true friend, and you have shown me pure and unalloyed devotional service in the form of this devotee. It would be difficult to find another pure Vaishnava like him anywhere in this entire creation. One can become totally purified just by observing his devotional attitude. Today, because you were right next to me, I have been able to avoid a great catastrophe of offending him."
When I saw the luxurious paraphernalia of Pundarik Bidyaniti, I was convinced he was simply a materialistic Vaishnava, given way to the pleasures of life. I thought this was interesting, a materialistic Vaishnava. So not all Vaishnavas are of the same quality, apparently. There's room for even me. But you, however, could read my mind, and being a great magnanimous soul and kind to me, you revealed to me the unlimited extent of Pundarik Vidyaniti's love for God. Yet today I have been offensive, and the extent of my offense could only be mitigated by your mercy. Now you must be further merciful to me and purify my heart by encouraging Pundarik Vidyaniti to accept me as his disciple. If I do not have such a person as him as my instructor, I cannot execute devotional service. And as a result, I do not know how I will counteract my offenses to him. So in this way, Gadadhar Pandit revealed his mind to Pundarik Vidyaniti that he felt, you know, I've committed this grave offense. And only by coming to the lotus feet of Pundarik Vidyaniti and accepting him will I be able to be forgiven for this. Mukunda was very pleased with his friend saying this, and it says he reached over and patted him on the back and said, "Very good, very good, I'm proud of you." So finally, 6 hours passed of Pundarik Vidyaniti being in this state of emotional ecstasy, and everything calmed down and his consciousness returned. He was peaceful again. So Mukunda then communicated to Pundarik Vidyaniti the desire of Gadadhar Pandit. And Pundarik Vidyaniti very happily said, "Yes, we can perform this initiation on such and such day," and picked a random auspicious date. And so in that way, Pundarik Vidyaniti, he was able to actually give that shelter to Gadadhar Pandit. Mentions that by the external vision, Pundarik Vidyaniti would be seen as a materialistic person, but yet he was a great Vaishnava. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami explains in his commentary on the Chaitanya Bhagavat, he says that one cannot understand a Vaishnava by superficial examination. That Krishna Lila itself is not accessible to pure sensual understandings of the materialistic mind. And as a result, many times devotees go unrecognized by conditioned souls. He mentions that Gauranga Mahaprabhu is called the hidden incarnation, hidden avatar, and this alone shows that sometimes the presence of a devotee is not externally noticed so easily. So in this same way, Pundarik Vidyaniti put on a particular view that deceived someone simply by his external appearance. I thought about this for a few moments, and I thought that, the internet, for instance, is rife with so much criticism of devotees. You can go and very easily, with no effort, find the description of devotees in their worst moments are what is perceived by their critics as their worst moments. But, you know, not all the time are we able to perceive a devotee directly. For instance, I know this one gentleman, his name's Seth Spellman III, and he happens to be a very well-respected immigration lawyer. And if you go to his website, you'll see the details of the different legal work he's done and the different legal organizations he belongs to, and how he's assisted by his office assistant, Madhu Agarwal, who's the daughter of a diplomat, and so they have very good qualifications. And so in this way, many people are enticed, "Oh, I should go and get them to do my immigration work." What those individuals do not necessarily know is that that Seth Spellman III happens to also be known as Seshadas and has taken on the responsibility for Srila Prabhupada of managing the GPC and helping to guide Prabhupada's ISKCON society. So there's a situation where externally something appears this way, but the reality is something else. I know another individual, a lady by the name of Deborah Rubens, who if you happen to bump into her at the hospital, you would perceive that, you know, just some typical nurse helping taking care of the sick people there and, you know, dealing with them. But the fact of the matter is that we know that this person to be Prabhupada's daughter, Vinod Vani, and that regularly she holds Sangha at her home and is always very eager to hear about the pastimes of the Lord and is always appreciating the devotees of the Lord. So, you know, in this way, we have devotees that may appear externally to be this, that, or the other, but in reality, when one comes to understand their devotional activities, we can see their advancement. So, in this way, Pundarik Vidhanini was very much appreciated by the devotees. Now, after some time there, Pundarik one night came to visit Mahaprabhu. And as soon as he came, it was quite late at night, one evening. And as soon as he came to see the Lord, he was overcome by such a deep level of love of God, he couldn't even pay obeisances. I mean, if we come before Srila Prabhupada used to say, my disciples, if they see me 100 times, they will offer obeisances 100 times. Pundarik Vidhanini comes to see the Lord one time a day and he can't even remember to offer obeisances. He's so, you know, he's just in so much devotional ecstasy. So, you know, and in the same way, Mahaprabhu was equally anxious to see Pundarik Vidhanini. So Mahaprabhu immediately brought him to his chest and embraced him. And his own tears washed the body of Pundarik Vidhanini. And this was one of those times when Mahaprabhu cried out, oh, Father, oh, treasure of love of Godhead. And they knew that this devotee must be very, very dear to Mahaprabhu. So, you know, in this way, Pundarik Vidhanini was certainly no stranger to the path of pure devotional service in Navadvipa. Now, after some time, we all know the course of the story that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas, he does his travels, he relocates to Puri, and every year the devotees from Navadvipa travel under the direction of Shivananda Sen, who would take care of all of the arrangements, and we'll talk about him another time because he's one of my favorite devotees. And so they would all go to Puri each year for the Rathyatra festival. So, of course, before they left, I should mention, before Mahaprabhu left, Pundarik Vidhanini was there for all the prominent pastimes and activities. He was there when Mahaprabhu sent Inanda and Haridas to do door-to-door Sankirtan. He was there when Mahaprabhu delivered Jagai and Madhai. You know, many of these different activities he was there for. So he was, you know, he was an intimate part of Mahaprabhu's entourage. So when they all went, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes Mahaprabhu seeing all the devotees coming to Jagannath Puri, Advaita, Nityananda, Mukunda, Srivas, Vidhanidhi, Vasudev, Murari. They all came, and the Lord enjoyed deep pastimes with them when they were in Jagannath Puri. So when the Chandan Yatra took place in Puri, Pundarik Vidhanini was there along with the rest of Mahaprabhu's associates. And this was when they would go to the lake there, the Narendra Sarovara Lake, and have their sporting pastimes. You know, Advaita and Inanda would splash water on each other and, you know, different devotees. Pundarik and Sarup Damodar, they paired off and splashed with each other. Sarup Damodar was Pundarik Vidhanini's closest friend. And they would spend all of their time, they stayed together when they were in Jagannath Puri. And they would engage in all of these things, laughing and splashing each other and, you know, mock fighting like that. And when it came time for the cleansing of the Gundisha temple, Pundarik Vidhanini was there also and relished the Mahaprasadam that Mahaprabhu arranged for everyone afterwards. One day, when Gadadhar Pandit was there in Puri with Mahaprabhu, he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said that, you know, sometime back, I gave my Ishta mantra that I received from Pundarika initiation. I told it to someone. And since that time, I haven't been able to concentrate properly on my chanting of the mantra. So if you'd be so kind, please give me the mantra again. He's asking Mahaprabhu like this. And Mahaprabhu was a bit shocked. He said, you already have a mantra, Pradesh Guru. He said, you should be very careful to ask someone else to again give you that mantra. And it's very offensive. Everything I have is yours, of course. Even my life. What to speak of this mantra? But as long as your guru is present, you should not ask me to repeat this mantra for it. It is not appropriate. So Chaitanya Bhagavat tells this entire story and, you know, stresses it very, very nicely. Gadadhar Pandit said, yes, yes, but, you know, my guru isn't exactly here right now. So please, you give me this mantra. Mahaprabhu said, destiny will bring Vidyaniti to you when the time is right. Pundarik Vidyaniti will be here within 10 days. I predict it. So you simply wait. So after that, time passed in 10 days. And sure enough, Pundarik Vidyaniti arrived. And upon his arrival, Gadadhar Pandit went to him and asked for the mantra to be repeated. And properly so, Pundarik Vidyaniti gave him that mantra again. Mahaprabhu says, how can I express the loving sentiment of a guru like Pundarik Vidyaniti on his disciple Gadadhar Pandit? Bhaktisiddhanta, of course, gives a very, very elaborate description of this verse and a very detailed explanation of how one should be very cautious of taking mantra from other than one's own guru. Now, while Pundarik Vidyaniti was staying in Puri during this time, there's a special festival that takes place called Odanashasti. And this is a very unique festival because during this festival, the servants of Lord Jagannath dress Lord Jagannath in very, very bright, bright colors. Very, very elaborate, bright colors. And it would seem that the Sadachar, the Vaishnava following of deity worship, is not really followed so well because in addition to this cloth being very, very brightly colored, it's also starched. And we all know that when you go to Ganga Prasads and buy your, of course, I don't buy anything except the Ganga Prasads, but, you know, unpaid for commercial energy. But when you buy the cloth, you know, it comes in its starch. You got to wash it once, twice, thrice, maybe 10 times to get all that starch out. Otherwise, you know, you put that dhoti on and that sari on, it's like, you look like the deities with the chatter sticking out. So at any rate, they wrap this cloth in such a special way that it's very stiff and they fold it and it makes a very decorative thing like that. And so, you know, it's the way that the pujaris worship the Lord during this particular festival. Pundarik Vidyaniti was a very pukka Vaishnava, very, very knowledgeable of the rules and regulations and executed them quite well too. So he said to his friend Sarup Damodar, they were walking one day, you know, two pals just walking back from the Jagannath temple after just taking darshan. And he said to Sarup Damodar, he said, you know, when we were just there for darshan, I saw that, you know, these pujaris had put unwashed cloth on Jagannath. I mean, I thought the people in Jagannath Puri were very knowledgeable of the Shruti and Smriti. So if that's so, how can they give some unwashed cloth to Lord Jagannath? Now, Sarup Damodar and Pundarik Vidyaniti are in equal moods of devotional service. So they would speak very frankly with each other, just, you know, lay it all out on the table there. They were just, you know, close friends on the same level devotionally, and they could speak about these things. So Sarup Damodar said, my friend Pundarik, the Supreme Lord, you know, he's beyond all these rules and regulations. It's become the general custom here, so there's no fault in it. This is what they do here. Pundarik wasn't satisfied with this. He said, well, it may be true that the Lord himself does not have to follow different rules and regulations, but his servants, they should follow the rules and regulations. In the worship of the Shivigraha of the Lord, he is beyond material qualities, but if you say this, you cannot say the servants are beyond those material qualities. So we have to judge. Is it proper or is it improper what they have performed? So Pundarikvidhaniti became a little bit, you know, just a little bit critical in his mind that the Pujaris are offering like this. Now, you know, Sarup Damodar said to him, said, anyway, you're just here from out of town. What do you know? You know, you're only here for 3 or 4 months of the year. You know, this is the way they worship the Lord, so stop making such a big deal of it. And so Pundarik chuckled. He said, yes, anyway, still, I don't think it's correct. You know, they shouldn't do it. And Sarup Damodar said, anyway, let's go and take some opposite and you quit talking about this. You're just going to get yourself in trouble. So like that, back and forth they're going, so. Of course, we've already established that Vidhiniti is very dear associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But sometimes the Lord wants to teach through his devotees. So through Pundarik Vidhiniti, he wished to show that it was not appropriate to make judgment calls on the pujaris of Lord Jagannath. So that night, as Pundarik Vidhiniti slept, Lord Jagannath appeared to him. And he appeared with his brother Balaram. Now, if you say to someone, oh, what is the most known descriptive quality of Lord Jagannath? They will all say his big smiling face. Because this is what we know Jagannath for, this big smile. Matter of fact, that's what the British knew him for. They were afraid of it. So, at any rate, Balaram and Jagannath appeared before Pundarik in his dream. And they were not smiling. They were not very happy with Pundarik Vidhiniti. As a matter of fact, those big arched up eyebrows were arched down. And the face was frowning. And they went before Pundarik Vidhiniti and they said, oh, you come and visit and dare to criticize our servants? You think you know what is best? Why don't you just leave and go back to your town? And then they started to slap him with their hands. Now, sometimes during the big festivals for Lord Jagannath and Balaram, because Lord Jagannath and Balaram have no specific hands, they put those gold hands on them. Now, it's not indicated whether they were slapping him with those gold hands or whether they were slapping him with their stumpy arms. But either way, they were slapping Pundarik Vidhiniti in the face, back and forth, back and forth. Balaram tossed one, and then Jagannath would toss one, and back and forth like this, and telling him, you think you can make some criticism like this? And in the dream, Pundarik Vidhiniti began to cry, oh, Krishna, Krishna, save me, please forgive my offenses. And he started crying. And Jagannath said to him, forgive your offenses? There is no end to your offenses. Who are you to question the pure and impurity of my service? The servants that engage in serving me are according to my own desire. You are staying here. You should know all these things. You thought that it was impure, but who asked you to say anything anyway? You can go home if you want to be so worried about maintaining purity. So in this way, the Lord disappeared. Now, the next morning, Pundarik Vidhiniti didn't really get up. First of all, he had a rough night. You know what it's like when you get insomnia, you can't sleep, you have a really intense dream. It's like, you're not so easy to get up. So he didn't get up. So Sarup Damodar came, knocked on his door, and then Sarup Damodar went in. And there's Pundarik. You know, he's still in bed with the covers pulled up over his face. Oh, I'm not feeling so well this morning. I can't really get up. No, no, come on, get out of bed. No, no, I can't really get up. No, but. So Sarup Damodar pulled on the covers. Come on, get up. And he looked at him, and he saw that his cheeks were all swollen. He said, Pundarik, what has happened to you? Pundarik sat up on the edge of his bed, and tears began to cry down his swollen cheeks. And he told the story in great detail to Sarup Damodar, his best friend. So this pastime shows that this pastime shows that Lord Jagannath can be very, very personal in more ways than one. So, anyway, these are some of the pastimes that are given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Vrindavan Das Thakur, and that describe the deep level of devotional love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that is experienced there by Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Longer version of that story. Anyway, we'll finish there at 7 o'clock. And we can try and come up to the standard devotional service of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, at least, and not criticizing others, you know. Yes, Sesha Prabhu, Mr. Spellman the third. I didn't know you were the third. Actually, I'm not clear about that, to be honest. Because some of the writings that I hear say it is, and some say it's not. There are two Gadadhars. There's Gadadhar Pandit and there's Gadadhar Das Goswami. I do believe that this is the Gadadhar Pandit that is Radharani from the Panchatattva. I know I said earlier not, but as I came across something else later, it changed my mind. So thank you for bringing that up, and I can recorrect myself. Yes. And the logic behind that is Pundarik Vidyanidhi being Vrishabhanu and Gadadhar Pandit being Radharani. Yeah. So.
What's the understanding about giving away that mantra?
Hmm? Right. When he was initiated, he was initiated in the 16-syllable mantra, and he shared that with someone. It's not the Harinam initiation like we know. Right, right.
You're not supposed to share it.
Huh? And right, and so it wasn't accepted as something you would share with others. But for some circumstance, which it doesn't elaborate on, he did share that. And then after that time, he felt he couldn't focus properly on it. So we wanted to receive it again, get that potency again, so to speak. Yeah. So the other tidbit of news as far as the Vaishnavacharya sessions is this will be our last session for a bit because I'm leaving next Tuesday morning to go to Russia and travel with Bhadahari and Indudumna Swami for a month. So when I get back in June, we'll continue. Yeah, well, you know, we'll have a little break so that we can all, dive deeper next time. All right. All glories to the Vaishnavacharyas, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna.
I mean, I couldn't be surprised if we had not shown up.
Thank you.
Where'd you have to go? I heard it was in Moscow.
What's that?
So smooth. Huh? Thank you.
Yeah, well, yeah. Okay. Well, next week will be here.
Yes, us over here. Yeah. And remember, we've got the time not going to go out. Thank you. Yes, you are.
Thank you.